This is your On the Path intro. Welcome to part two and enjoy.
Triss goes on her way and tells us about this lady, Corinne, or Corinne, who can help us find Ciri in our dreams, which is quite an interesting concept. So we go off to find Corinne, and she is in this house that's recently been bought over by a banker. So the banker stops us outside and he tells us how he spent so much money. And this is quite interesting to me because we've seen the beggars and the thieves of the town, and now we're speaking to this kind of pompous guy who's like, I've just spent all this money on this house, you know, bragging about how his dad's a banker, he's a banker. And Geralt makes a funny line where he says something like, yeah, you could have just said your name. I didn't need that whole background.
I don't need the whole story.
Yeah. He tells us that he hired Corinne dream the history of the house because he believes it to be haunted. He's hearing giggles, stuff's moving around, but he says that she's been in there for a few days and she hasn't come out yet, so we pop in to see what's going on. As you're going upstairs, you can hear these little giggly voices, and it's like a little girl's voice. There's stuff moving around, and you find Corinne in kind of a distressed state. And there's also what looks to be a godling standing at the end of her bed, and who she runs off, and we're going to help her out. So I think in her sort of dream state, Corinne mentioned something about a doll in a, what is the word, like a cradle. Mm-hmm. So we have to travel around the house finding these bits and bobs to put in their correct place. And we eventually get led down to the basement where we find Sarah, the godling. I think this is the second godling we meet.
After second Johnny. It's the
Johnny.
Second one.
Yeah.
I love and just Johnny. Like Johnny, she's kind of she's very mischievous, she's up to no good, and she says that the house isn't haunted, she's just playing tricks on everybody because she wants to stay in the house. She says that the house was empty, so she moved in, and now the banker has bought it and wants her to leave. So we make an agreement with Sarah the godling that if she allows Corinne to wake up, that Geralt will lie to the banker saying this house is haunted by a demon, nobody can live here. So that's one of the options. I think the other option is you just have to scare her off.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the bad ending.
That's a shitty one.
Yeah, that's it. That's if you're playing asshole Geralt.
You have to burn. I don't remember exactly what it was. You have to burn something.
You have to go and get this like special like incense that you have to burn it within this kind of like stove thing that she's inside. And it makes her kind of jump out, and she's like, I hate you. You're like, and she curses you.
This is, I heard that. Did I scare you? That is just stuck in my head. It's one of the Gwent voice lines, I believe. And God, I love that. I will say this though. I chose to get rid of her in my last, my most recent playthrough that I'm on now.
Okay.
And I have my reasons that I cannot say.
Go on.
Oh,
I have my reasons I cannot say, because that comes back in, I don't know, 9 months from now, a year and a half from now.
Okay.
Whatever. We may be seeing her again, but I banished her for a good reason. So don't hate me. I did hate doing it, though, because she's so nice and just funny, just non-threatening, because Geralt makes it clear, like even with Johnny and them, that godlings are not a threat. Like they're not going to do anything. It's not a true monster, if you want to call it that.
They're just kids acting out.
Just mischievous. And again, this other guy, Rudolph de Jonkheer is the guy's name. It's an aggressively Dutch name, like, which means Nilfgaard, you know, they blend a lot of those Dutch names.
These are all the bankers, all the guys that have a lot of money.
Yeah, he's a banker. He's trying to buy this. And, you know, this takes on a much different meaning, you know, especially to me, having living through like 2008, the recession and all that. And trying to buy a house now is people buying up houses, you know, rich people buying up houses. Now I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to like you from real life, especially in a game, you know, you rich asshole here. And he's Nilfgaardian, which is always, you know, it's easier to hate on the Nilfgaardians. Is there too many? We talked about that side quest with the Nilfgaardian noblewoman trying to find her son. I'm trying to think if there's too many times that you actually come across Nilfgaardians in a good light.
Hardly ever.
I guess that shows what we're supposed to think.
Yeah.
But that won't stop a lot of people from being a pro Nilfgaardian.
Yeah.
And I just kind of scratch my head about it and think, okay, Are you pro Nilfgaardian because you like them playing Gwent? Are you actually pro Nilfgaardian because of what they've done in the Witcher series? Because that might, you might need to rethink that somewhat. I guess like the people like the Empire in Star Wars, right?
Yeah, probably. Mm. I think it's that kind of plus having Emir in Witcher 3, once again the voice by Charles Dance is just. I mean, so good.
I'm obsessed. He's incredible. And he's just, I remember when I first played through the game, I was, you know, in the midst of, or maybe, yeah, Game of Thrones must have been over by then. But as soon as you hear his voice, you know it's him.
Yeah.
And I was like, Charles Dance is in this. And it was just amazing. Yeah. So yeah, he's quite a cool leader, I guess. And then in the Netflix series as well, Fringilla, I kind of love her in the series, so she would draw me towards Nilfgaard in the series at least.
Yeah, she has that vibe that kind of you when you kind of you see how the character is, you're like, oh, she's cool. I could get behind that.
Do you know of how? Because I'm pretty sure, like to this day, this is the only voice acting role that Charles Dance has ever done. And I saw this little interview about it where he said he enjoyed it and like had fun with it. But do you know like the story behind getting him?
I actually don't. I remember someone once told me, but I to do it justice, I would have to ask, probably go back to Boris once again to kind of see how they got him on it. But yeah, I think it was one of the ones that he did, and he had a lot of fun. But you know, he's such an incredible like actor that, you know, I think his presence alone is like brings like magnitude. Yeah, but I feel like they're like when it comes to voice acting and voices, I think they're so crucial in video games and also in any animated series. Like we've been kind of going back and forth about this. But I like for me also Geralt of Rivia, you know, Doug is perfect, but we also have a very, very known actor for the Polish one, which actually is the one that was in the TV series, which wasn't the best, but he,
oh, really?
Yeah. He's been voicing Geralt since the early, like Witcher 1 and also plus in the TV show. So he's kind of also that voice that I will always associate with Geralt. For the English one, it will be always Doug. And for like other stuff, like, I do not see like Batman without Kevin Conroy, Joker without Mark Hamill. Like those are for me, like whenever I think about the character, that's the first voice that kind of pops into my ear and mind when I think about it. So it's very nice to have like distinctive voices because it's very easy for you to associate with them and kind of like, oh, this is cool. This is awesome. Like I've also watched this and saw that. So
it'd be a massive challenge. And I think that's still the thing that Henry Cavill has to do with Geralt is not make it exactly that. And with Charles Dance as Emir, it could have been easy for CDPR and for him to be like, just do Tywin. People are going to love it. You know, it'd be like that, but he's not Tywin. And I think it's better that he's not because it separates it because it's not exactly the same. He does. Yeah. He seems more as Emir. He seems more even keel, like he's in control, but, and maybe because I just know the backstory of it, he doesn't feel full on confident that like Tywin does. Tywin feels untouchable in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Where Emir, it's like he needs this to happen. He knows, I'm going to bring it up again. It's that sword of Damocles hanging over his head from the merchant guild and all that. He knows his time is numbered. He needs Ciri back for reasons of state, as he mentioned before. And I got that in the writing. I got that in the acting and just, amazing, perfect casting. And I mean, it's Charles Dance. Like, how could it not be perfect, right?
Yeah, exactly. Can't go wrong with him.
So great. Okay, so we decide what to do with Sarah the Godling, whether or not you chase her out of the house or you cut a deal with her. She allows Corrin to wake up. Corrin wakes up and tells us that she was having horrible dreams about furniture chasing her and stuff. but she's very grateful and she offers to help us. But she needs to go home and rest for a bit first. At this point, you can go off and do other things. But if you carry on, you go to Corrin's house where we perform some kind of dream. Geralt referred to it as like a seance type thing. So it was kind of ghostly, kind of magic. I don't know if she's technically like a mage or if she's magic. I know she was referred to as an oniromancer. Yes.
She's an oniromancer, which is a type of mage. And this Corrine Tilly is a call out to Condwinimer's Tilly, who was one of the Gwent journeys, with Nimue, Lady of the Lake. So the last book, Lady of the Lake, Ez Sapkowski, and it's my favorite, but Ez Sapkowski goes over and over and over. The narrative device, I guess you can say, for some of it, is Nimue, the Lady of the Lake, is using, or with, I should say, Con Winnemers Tilly to go through these dreams about Ciri. It's way in the future. And we are reliving, if you will, the Lady of the Lake, Ciri, through these dreams. If you interpret it that way, which I kind of always did, kind of throws up, we don't know what we know in that book. Anyway, I love that book. God, anyway.
It's a good one.
Yeah, I digress. So yeah, she's an Oniromancer, and this is a direct call out to, we're kind of seeing about Ciri in this, and just, again, just a love letter, I swear. Like I said that before, that The Witcher 3 just seems like an absolute love letter to kind of the books, and so much of it, you can just see once you've read them, that it doesn't take it away either, because like Lucy, you had no idea about it, but it still hit the same. Yeah. And it's just like a deep layer that you can appreciate without taking away.
Yeah, that's this additional layer of magic. Like, but it showed in a different way. Like through going into a dream state, you're able to kind of see what has happened. And from a narrative standpoint, it gives you a very quick roundup of what has happened, and kind of sets the tone in terms of what's happening in Novigrad. And you kind of see, okay, This is now the direction I should be heading into. So it's a nice kind of like in previous episode, you know, and you have the whole like what has happened, and then kind of you can move on from this, right?
I was just gonna say it's a really like unique way of bringing you up to speed with what's happened, because Corinne asks you to tell her some memories so that she can build up a picture of what this relationship is, and you can skip it if you want. It's not necessary. Yeah. You can say, no, I don't feel comfortable doing this, I don't feel comfortable, or you can keep telling her different stories about Ciri. And this was all new to me, whereas I imagine it's book lore, I think, was what you were saying, Brett. But it's just a lovely way of giving the viewer, or sorry, the player, or if they want it, if they're interested in the whole background story, but you don't necessarily have to do it.
Yeah, and you go through the steps, and if you see Geralt telling all these stories, which are very like touchy-feely, they get like hit you like straight here, then if you go fully into detail, you kind of see why Ciri is so important. It adds a little bit more information and lore and background to it. So yeah, that was the idea for sure.
All right, so the four things you can do here is, I remember when we first met, I trained her at Kaer Morhen, saved her life once, and she was there when I died. And yeah, the remember when we first met brings up Brokilon Forest. And again, that was something that was cut out of the show, but we don't have to worry about that. So brings up that part there. And we kind of, there's so much of this. See, this is why I love Novigrad so much, is there's so much of this that lays into the rest of the game. And it's setting up something that's going to happen hours down the road. And when Geralt and Ciri, spoiler alert, when Geralt and Ciri reunite, you get like a vision of this, where they first met. So even if you didn't play that, the seed has been planted right here of this, where they met and they're little and they do all that. And oh man, the training at Kaer Morhen and the saved her life. They bring up Stiga Castle. All of this is just complete book stuff. And a lot of it's Lady of the Lake. And it'll always be near and dear to me. And
because it's one of the best books, especially to everyone that, you know, who read all of them, the Lady of the Lake is always the staple.
Whenever most people, when I ask or when I hear, they'll say Baptism of Fire. Like that seems to be a lot because it's the Hansa. It has the battle on the bridge and the ending, you know, all of that there.
But people still think that the Hounds is kind of maybe a little bit too boring and too many descriptions there. Maybe that's why.
Oh, do you think people don't like that? Or
I think some people don't like that.
Really?
I think it feels too like Lord of the Ring-ish or something like that.
Oh, wait, that's a bad thing? I thought that'd be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I love Regis, so I'm not the one that's against it. But I feel like I've heard some people were kind of like, yeah, you know, it could be a little bit more action there.
Wow, okay. So is your favorite Lady of the Lake?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, nice. Okay. Yeah, no, it is my... I always feel like I'm a contrarian when I say that. But my favorite member of the Hansa is actually Angoulême.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just... The way that they met and Geralt thinking it was Ciri, literally for like a couple of seconds being like, that's Ciri. And then just her whole story is just so tragic.
It is.
And the way, like literally, if I start describing, spoiler alert again, she's not in the games for a reason. Like the way she dies, I will start like choking up. And so I'm not going to go down that road. But yeah, I love that there. But this was just a great way, again, we mentioned deliver exposition. There when I died, Lucy, what did you think of that? Or what did you think of that now?
This, you know, obviously any player would be like, what? And then he tells the story of how I think it's a young boy drives a pitchfork through his chest. And then he continues a story of how he and Yen were dying and Ciri put them on a boat or something like that and sent them away off somewhere and left them there. And that was the last time he saw her. So then your mind is ticking over going, so what, did she leave them to die? Like, did she know they were going to die or how did they come back? So many questions. I've still never looked into it because I kind of like leaving things like that unsolved for a wee while. But maybe I need to educate myself.
Okay. Because I might, can I just say?
Yeah, okay. Educate me. Okay. Educate me.
Because basically, yeah, that's towards, again, the end. Oh my God, Lady of the Lake. So you have this thing at Stiga Castle where a bunch of people die. A bunch of people near and dear to us die. A bunch of bad people die too. Ciri's rescued. And it's one thing that I actually had a problem with the game here. At the end of that, this is where Emery reveals that Ciri is his daughter. You know, they already revealed that in the show. It's his daughter, and he wants to have a baby with her because he needs to have the baby. And yes, it's father, daughter need to have a baby because that's what's going to save the world. But the only two people that really know this are Geralt and Yen.
Yeah.
So he basically says, you're going to have to kill yourself. Like, you can kill yourselves or we're going to kill you or that's it. Ciri's like despondent. So Geralt and Yen go to this bathtub. They, again, have sex like one last time or whatever. And they're going to slit their wrists. But Ciri convinces Emir, doesn't exactly say how, or kind of alludes to it, to like let them go. So they let them go. And then, okay, we got that. And this is after Brenna. Basically, the next chapter is there's the Rivian Pogrom. And they show that in The Witcher 2. And CDPR actually named him Rob. Rob. Yeah, I know, because he's not named in the book. And I remember thinking, the head scratcher again. I'm like, they named him Rob. What a weird name, like R-O-B. So Rob, this voice, like stabs a pitchfork. Geralt's dying. He's bleeding out. The rest of the Haunts is there. Zoltan's there. The remaining Haunts, I should say. Zoltan's there. Dandelion's there. Triss is there. Mm-hmm. Yen is there. Yen tries to save Geralt and uses this super magic. And they're like, no, you're going to die. Don't do it. And she basically dies right there with him. Ciri calls for this unicorn, a Huraquax, who, again, that's a whole other story there, that's going to take them away. Mm-hmm. And the funniest thing here to me is she's going to take them away to this island. She puts them on this boat. And Triss basically asks to come. And Ciri's like, nah, like you can't come. And to me, that was always a thing that separates the big three. Like, yeah. That's the big three were on that boat. It was both of them dead. Takes them to the Isle of, not the Isle of Mists, Avalon, basically Avalon, if you want to call it that. And they, some say they're dead and Ciri's making this up.
Oh, okay.
And then some say no. And like CDPR, obviously they're alive and back. It's an interpretation thing. Mm-hmm. Like I know Alyssa, Breakfast in Beauclair. She's like, no, they're dead. Like they're died. Mm-hmm. And the way I read it, the way it goes down, it's so hard to say this because Ciri's literally telling the story to Galahad, like that Galahad of Knights of the Round Table. And the way I got out of it, honestly, is Ciri's like, no, they came back to life. They got married. Everybody was there. And the people she said was there, some of them are dead. And it's like,
oh, really?
Yeah, like I think she says like Angoliam, I think Regis. Like the people that died saving her. No, she's just saying this because earlier, Geralt tells Emir, only shit stories have bad endings. Like it's a bad story unless it has a good ending. And to me, I always interpreted that as Sapkowski putting that seed in my head. They died, but you can't have a bad ending. So Ciri has that. And then she rides off to Camelot with Galahad.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's kind of what I interpreted it as.
Like our interpretation was maybe a little bit different here than what you see from the books. But yeah, people interpret it in two ways. Either they're dead, the end, or actually the, you know, something happens after that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm glad y'all did because there wouldn't be games. Yeah. It wouldn't happen. And that's what I mean. And that's the interpretation, which is fine, because again, it does not state in there exactly what happened. It's open to that interpretation. Honestly, some people might not like it. The people that need closure. Book, I need to know closure exactly what happened. And the one, Lucy, you saw me play through it, that Farewell the White Wolf, that Witcher 2 mod that has to do with the story that something ends, something begins story that Sapkowski wrote for his friend. I played through that and you get to see that. And you actually go back to that island to try to get things. And you see, because in the CDPR lore, like the Wild Hunt attacked them and that's how they escaped and Geralt had to ride with them. And they showed all that. And like that thing was just so cool to tie that together. Like book wise, you get to go back to the island of Avalon, and then it leads into what actually happened in between the end of the books and the beginning of the CDPR mm-hmm. lore. So that's something there, man. If people have The Witcher 2, play that mod. If you've read the books, especially, yeah. it is yeah, so it's really damn good. Cool. You played through it?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Yeah, I remember when they were hitting us up, like working on it. It was really, really cool to see. Yeah,
it's cool the company to let them do that, because you've seen sometimes with mods, people just shut it down, and something like that. Again, I've said, you know, The Witcher 3 was a love letter. This was a complete love letter.
Yeah.
You know, don't think they made any money. They did it of their own accord. All those lines exactly. written, everything they did creating, it was so good.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was amazing. And yeah, it tells you a little bit also around this backstory, because I feel like it's one of those things that a lot of people always discuss, like, are they dead? Are they alive? Like, what happened there? Mm-hmm. And there's always room for interpretation here.
Well, now I don't need to read the books.
I mean, you can read them, and then you can see kind of how you interpret it based on the description that is there, right?
I'm still trying to get through The Last Wish. So
I can send you. I know I took off the old Whispers of Oxen first episodes. I can just send you them. They're quick.
Yeah, maybe I should do that.
10-15 I just described them. You get my historical input there. The historical and philosophical. You can hear about Plato's cave as well as The Witcher.
So lastly is we actually see the dream that Geralt experiences after going through all these memories with Ciri. And it's of a swallow and dandelion. And this is, I believe, the first time we see dandelion in the game in his extravagant, delightful outfit.
Yeah.
And the swallow is obviously meant to represent Cirilla. And they're both seeming in quite a lot of distress. So that's all you really get from it. It wasn't, for some reason, when I was playing through this a couple nights ago, I thought that it was one of those moments where we start playing as Ciri, but it's not. It's just this very quick, symbolic, stressful dream. And when we come out of it, Corinne tells us to go to the Rosemary and Thyme, and that's where the next quest continues.
Yeah, it said that he was left the Rosemary and Thyme, so Dandelion moving on up in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll never forget first playing through the game, knew nothing about it. Just seeing his outfit and the way he would act. I remember being so out of place, but now it's a good out of place. It's kind of like show Dandelion that's grown on me, like Witcher Dandelion.
Yeah.
It's extravagant, but it's very much, I keep calling this like a medieval fantasy. I should say at this point right here, this is like early modern, like late Renaissance fantasy. And this colorful, you know, Lucy, you know, I love to see color in old medieval and old Renaissance, because again, it wasn't as drab as so much what Hollywood has. And so him doing this and Dandelion, not Yaskier, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know. Yeah. I can't. Or Dandelion.
Dandelion.
Dandelion. Yeah. I still get caught between calling him Yaskier or not. And I do think that has to do with.
I prefer Yaskier.
And it was the Polish translation, right?
Yaskier.
It's Yaskier. And does that mean, is that what Buttercup is, or something to do with Buttercup in the translation, right? Why they call him Dandelion?
I don't know, to be honest.
Okay. Because what I always heard was, because I looked it up and I'm like, why is his name Dandelion? Why not just call him Yaskier? Like, why would they not just say, like, that name's not that crazy. It's not like bad or anything. And I thought it was some kind of translation, that whatever the Polish translation would have been Buttercup, and they decided Dandelion was better than Buttercup. I don't know if I'm just completely had a fever dream.
I have no idea. I know for me, it was always Yaskier. And I was surprised when he was named Dandelion. I was like, Dandelion? That's Yaskier, right?
Strange, isn't it?
That was a book translation thing, right? Mm-hmm. That CDPR just went with. Okay, that wasn't a CDPR thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then we also, we kind of see him. He's kind of distressed and the swallow is like flying around. But also it's maybe, you know, for the player, it's like... It is explained why the swallow represents Ciri, like so they kind of get it, because I think that maybe from if you're playing the game, you're like, why is a bird like flying around and who's this, like this guy, and you learn later like what's happening, but kind of, you know, follows the story and kind of you proceed to the next quest.
Yeah, when we went through the Wandering in the Dark with Kira, there's all the swallow things that
the
unnamed, unfaced thing person that still has not been revealed yet that was leading Ciri. It's in there. So they've really, you know, hit on the swallow. Yeah. So if you're kind of looking at it, you're like, oh, is that a swallow? Oh, that must be related to Ciri. And of course, Geralt says it in there anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's one of those that leads us on to the next parts. And the only thing that I have left that I did not mention that I forgot to do was if you loot Triss's house or wherever she's staying or whatever, you can pick up the Rose of Remembrance. Mm-hmm. And this is from The Witcher 2. It's from the Elven Garden.
Yes.
Or the Elven, not garden, Elven Shrine.
I think it's a shrine.
Like a garden, yeah, like a garden shrine outside.
It's a garden
of
shrine, yeah.
Yeah, outside of Flotsam. And, you know, it was a big thing in The Witcher 2. This is another one of those things, too, to kind of put in little Easter egg for those that remember that. And, yeah, Berger, I know you. Pro Scoia'tael here. Always pro Scoia'tael. Oh, yeah. In case you haven't seen it, I always show that to everybody here. I got one
nice.
Of those. Yeah, when they gave these out, I can't remember what it was, a Gwent tournament that someone
nice.
Gave these for.
That's awesome.
And, yeah, you could buy it. And I know, yeah, I got I think it says number one on there, actually,
yeah.
too. So, yeah, that was there. I know, well, Ogulo got a Skellige one. So,
that's
really
awesome.
Only two people I know that has one. But, yeah, the Scoia'tael right there. Anytime someone.
The best.
Yeah, anytime someone in stream starts talking bad about elves or Scoia'tael, I put that up there and then
yeah.
just purge them.
Here
purge
you
them
go.
Real quick.
And they get banned.
They get a quick little ban there. Well, that's going to do it for us. You can find us on Twitter at Witcher Podcast. Email us, witcherpod@gmail.com. We're on Instagram at Witcher Pod. And the link to Lucy's Discord is down there. Please come tell us stuff we may have missed, didn't know, any other FYIs, or by all means, correct me if I was mistaken for anything. Again, thank you so much, Pavel Berger. You've been great. We love having guests on. Thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you?
Thank you for having me. It was awesome to sit down. And yeah, like you said, time flew by very quickly, but I feel like every time when we talk about The Witcher, we can talk about it for days, and the passion shows through everybody, which is always amazing. Yeah, it's crazy because I read the books first when I was like, I don't know, maybe less than like 18, maybe 17, something like that. Because it's actually in Poland, fun fact, mandatory reading in high school to read.
Is it?
To read the short stories only.
Is it really?
Yes, it is on your Polish lessons. So you get to discuss the book in school, which is amazing.
Aww.
So The Last Wish, you go through it, like through the whole thing, and you get to discuss it. And yeah, it's crazy that since that point in my life, The Witcher has been part of it till now and still is, which is amazing. But yeah, back on topic, if you want to find me Twitter at Paweł Burza or on Twitch at Burza46. And if you want to check out the podcast that we have, it's on the Gwentfinity YouTube channel and also on Spotify called the Flurza Podcast.
Yeah, we will put a link to that below. And man, I know between you and Flake, y'all talk. There you go.
We can talk for days too.
I know. I did. I had an old interview podcast made like Gwent people, and Flake was on there, and we went like 2 hours. And honestly, we had to just like stop, because it would have just kept going and going. I think we went like 30 minutes on Star Wars alone.
Yeah.
And that was just, I finally had to be like, okay, this isn't the Star Wars, we have to pull it back to that. But again, thank you so much for being here. And yeah, sometime down the road, if you'd like to come back, we'd love to have you.
Of course. Of course, especially for the expansions, it would be nice to be here. Maybe,
yes.
maybe a little bit more behind the scenes then. Yeah.
We've said it time and time again. Hearts of Stone alone will take each
a lot of episodes.
Mission. Oh, each like mission will be like at least two parter, because that is so deep. Okay, Hearts of Stone down there. Prom for another day. Okay. Again, thanks for being here. Yeah, Lucy, where can people find you?
I'm just thinking here, Flurza Podcast. What would our podcast name be if we combined our names?
Brucey.
Oh,
that's terrible.
That's bad.
Lorette. You can't
no,
say that.
It doesn't work.
My mom's name is Rhett.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
it's not.
So I don't know. Brucey? No.
Brucey Podcast. We'll stick with On the Path.
We'll table that for another day.
But you can find me on Twitter, Twitch, and Instagram at Lucy J. Robin.
And you're Elden Ring. How's Elden Ring going?
Oh,
no, oh okay,
God.
There you go. All right.
There, that's it. I sighed. It's up and down. Up and down,
okay.
We'll say.
That seems to be Elden Ring, what it does to people. All right.
Exactly.
You can find me on Twitter at TheFoxBride4. You can find me on Twitch at TheFoxBride. I'm currently going through The Witcher 3 all over. I think I'm in Skellige, but I kind of just go all about that. Join us next time on The Path as we break some flowers and get Junior.